Welcome to TSW Comics,
a monthly look between the covers of Marvel's Star Wars comic book series.
Hey everyone, welcome back to TSW Comics, issue 2. I'm Mark.
And I'm Rob Cast.
And this is our monthly look at Marvel's Star Wars comic run, or certain elements of it, as we move through their rather extensive range of books. Mr. Cast, how are you?
I am very good, thank you. Actually, I should mention, I was listening back to our last episode. We had the opportunity to record in person at Celebration.
Indeed.
And I was very tired. So if I rambled a bit, I apologize.
We were both tired. I think most of the people there are actually very, very tired that weekend,
yes,
aren't they? It was good, actually, to be able to do that in person.
Yes.
And this one I found, I mean, this is going to, we're going to publish this on Thursday. It's now, well, for me, it's the dead of night on Tuesday. It's yes. Taken all month to be able to sync our schedules up to do this. I might have underestimated how difficult this was going to be when we started this podcast.
Well, and also too, I started with a different crew, and our hours got bumped an hour. So with the time change and me losing an hour at the end of the day, it's pretty tight. So.
It's pretty difficult, but we'll make more of an effort next.
Yes,
next
we'll
month.
Forge.
Yeah. So I've noticed from your Twitter stream that you've been consuming a lot of comic books over the past month. Did you start Screaming Citadel yet?
Yes, I have.
And what did you make of that?
Without
going too far into it, because I'm sure
going
we're
too
covering
far, I think I expected more, but I think that's just because it's a decent comic on its own. But I think because my expectations were so low for Dr. Abra, and then it blew my expectations away.
Yeah.
And then, oh, well, throw Luke into the mix. It must be I just hyped myself up way too much. If I would have just pulled it off the shelf and read it, I would have, oh, this is a great story.
Yeah.
But because I set myself up for the fall, I think I was expecting way too much. But it's not done yet, so.
How far in are you? Because there's two at the moment, right?
Yes. They came out with Screaming Citadel, number one. And then they, in the Star Wars, the next Star Wars proper, like the main run, they had part two. And then now this week, I think as we speak now, tomorrow, Dr. Aphra comes out, and that's going to be part three.
Right, I see.
So they're getting you to dip. They hook you in with the first one as a standalone.
Yeah.
Now they're weaving it through both Dr. Aphra and Star Wars.
Yeah, trying to bait the completist within.
Yes.
I've read the first issue, and I must admit it didn't grab me the way Maul and Aphra have grabbed me and pulled me in and engaged me. So it took a few sittings for me to get through it.
Yeah.
So I've kind of lost a bit of momentum with it at the moment, but I'm sure I'll catch up with it at some point.
Oh yeah, and I'm sure, like, were you feeling much like I was? Like, you're like, oh, this is, you
know,
like,
because it was one of those pins in the map that I thought, well, that's, you know, that's on the way to the new Darth Vader series, which should be out very shortly in the next few weeks. I thought, oh, well, this is one of those things I'm going to have to pick up and read, and we can talk about it on here. And I was expecting to sort of be blown away, like that issue one of Dr. Aphra, I was expecting to be blown away by it.
Yes.
And I wasn't. And I don't think I don't know what I was expecting, to be honest, but I definitely didn't get the Luke I was hoping for.
That's my thoughts exactly, but I think we were just seeing naive, just off the farm Luke, fresh from destroying the Death Star, not in the Empire, or not, he hasn't met Yoda yet. Like, seeing him is kind of, oh yeah, that was him. You mean, we hear Luke and we're expecting Return of the Jedi Luke, or even now Force Awakens Luke.
Yeah,
like,
Jedi Master Luke.
Yeah. And then we get, when you see him back and he's portrayed perfectly, but it's just like, oh yeah, he was kind of a hokey character for a bit.
He was, but you know, the last time I read Luke was in the Vader Down.
Yes.
And it didn't seem like the same character to me.
Yeah.
It seemed like a regressed version.
Yes.
But I know that obviously because of the exchange, without spoiling too much for people listening, but
no,
there's an exchange between 000 and Luke that firmly places the Vader Down timeline for us around Citadel. So we know that this is after the Vader Down timeline. And yeah. And I just felt like the Luke I was reading in this belonged before the Luke that I'd read in Vader Down. He seemed like a much more developed character in Vader Down. And yeah. This seems much more like that wide-eyed farm boy. But that might just be me.
I think you're right on the money. It just maybe there's something with Vader, or you know, it could be us reading it.
Yeah.
You mean, you know.
Yeah, it may be because he wasn't quite as front and center in Vader Down. There was a lot more going on, wasn't there?
Yes.
Okay, well, we have a couple of news stories. We're still, with this just being issue two, like the third podcast we've done under the comics banner, it might be an idea just to refresh people on what the structure will be. So we've got a couple of news stories to get to. Then we're going to have a brief conversation about two issues of Darth Maul, issue two and issue three, a bit of a recap on the story and what we thought of that. And then we'll wrap up the pod with a voicemail from one of the listeners. So should we jump into this news? Do you want to take this first news story, Rob?
Yes, absolutely. It's excellent news. Captain Phasma is getting a 4-issue miniseries. It includes the talents of Kelly Thompson and Mark Chicaretto, I believe.
Yeah, something around there. That's around. Very challenging. I'm glad you got this news story, and that wasn't by design.
It will release in September with the first cover using art created by Paul Rinaldo. The series is a bridge gap between The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi to explain how Captain Phasma escaped the Starkiller base after being dumped in the trash compactor by Han and Finn.
Yeah.
So, wow. Yeah. I'm when people listen to this, obviously we're doing a Star Wars comic podcast, so we're into it. And my comic book guy has standing orders. Anything with Star Wars on the title, you pull it.
So you're going to get this.
Yes, absolutely.
I think with these little runs, because I'm from the old school as well, of setting in for the long haul and expecting to get 30 years out of a run of comics. But now this new sort of miniseries fad, just four issues, of this book, I'll probably get it as well, just because it'll be a nice short burst of investment of time and money.
Yeah, and they also make outstanding trade paperbacks. That's the when they come out where you get all 4 issues in one. It's not a hardcover. It's still it's not as floppy as the regular comics, but you mean they're great, especially when you there's the complete story, and you can usually get them on Amazon.
Yes. Yeah, well, you know me, I'm all digital, so this will be this will be a digital purchase for me, but what I think I'm probably going to do is I'll wait for this until it comes out, like the next trade, digital trade, I'm doing air quotes, when the next digital trade I buy will probably be Lando, because I've been advised by a number of people to sort of pick that up and read it. So it'll be the full collection of Lando from Amazon, which will drop through Kindle into Comixology and end up in my Marvel app. That's the way it works.
Wonderful.
And I'll pick it up for a fraction of the Marvel price as well, which makes me a very happy bunny. So that's probably the way I'll do this. I don't think there's anything time sensitive with it, is there?
No, exactly. And then if there is anything, you obviously like leading up to Force Awakens. So if this is released, obviously we'll be reading these issues, and her last one might tie in right with the release in December.
Of Last Jedi, you mean, yeah?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Last Jedi.
Yeah. So we're looking at I've put the cover art for this first issue in the show notes.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at it, it looks very much Force Awakens related with the Kylo Ren and Rey duel.
Yes.
So it seems very targeted to that. But yeah, I'm intrigued. I am very very intrigued. They need to do more with this character because they're shortchanged in the movies. So that'll be. It'd be interesting to see what they do here to expand.
Yep, and it's a question everybody's been asking, and also too her Captain Phasma just from the cover art, like she's gonna leap right off the page. Like I don't know if it's me and it's the villain bias, because with Darth Maul, Vader, Phasma now, like all of them that are coming down the pipe, it's like oh, they just They're great. And then even the Anakin Obi-Wan, I was like, ah, it's okay. But visually, the villains, like the dark side, just, oh, it must be such a treat to draw and have the concepts. And
yeah, but I've found that a lot of the stuff, a lot of the expanded storytelling now is dark side centric, isn't it? Like from the Tarkin book to the, you know, like Darth Maul is one of the, and right. Vader down. That's some of the most popular comic books. They seem to be, everything seems to be directed at the bad guys. I don't know whether that's because they're not developed enough in the movies because we're following the heroes. And now here's an opportunity for us to say, follow Maul through his story on the run up to Phantom Menace. It gives them an opportunity to play with the character, expand the character a little bit, and it deepens that character. As when we talk about the two Maul books this evening, we'll look at some of this stuff with the way it does that character a service. And I hope that Captain Phasma gets the same treatment.
Yeah, and also too, I know everybody was disappointed with turning all the other books into legends and starting off with brand new, a clean slate, but we're reading these books and we're saying, oh, look, it's Darth Maul. And like, we have seen Darth Maul on the Clone Wars and on Rebels and on obviously the Phantom Menace, and we've read these comics. So we're completely up to date.
Yeah.
Where there's not some, he didn't make an appearance in some other book somewhere that fallen off that we didn't read and wasn't a bestseller. So, but there's key bits of information that are now quasi canon. Like we know we have his complete arc, and that's one of the advantages of the clean slate. Now I know not everybody was happy with it, but I love it because now I get, oh, my Legends books are still on my shelf behind me. I can enjoy them anytime I want, but now I'm like, oh, here's the definitive story, and I'm getting more.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good. Everyone wins.
Yes.
This is a silky segue for you. Another bunch of winners are the people who voted for Dr. Aphra. By the time we get into this is old news, but it's happened in the past month, so we would be remiss if we didn't mention it. But Hasbro went out to fandom and asked them to vote on a character to get the new vintage range that's coming next spring. Of 3 3/4 inch, I think they're multiple points of articulation, aren't they? Not 5 points of articulation, the new vintage 3 3/4. They asked fans to vote for a figure to be made. And Dr. Aphra was up there, and she just beat Ahsoka Tano for the fan favourite choice. Wow. So we are going to get a vintage carded Dr. Aphra figure. Now, isn't that, that says a lot for this character coming out of nowhere like this, right?
It does. I was expecting, whenever it goes to the fans, isn't there a history of them going with Legends characters, like kind of a backlash? I think, and for this is great. Like it just, and to beat Ahsoka, like, come, holy.
Yeah. Yeah, Ahsoka having spent years on TV and then in comic books and books, how on earth does this Dr. Aphra character, is it because she's kind of part Han Solo, part indie. She's like a hybrid of all the cool parts of the coolest characters, isn't she?
You can see a bit of Leia in her. You can, you know, like
There's even a little bit of Ripley in there. You know, the strong female archetype is all on display in that thing. And I think it's really appealing.
Yep. And also too, I think with Dr. Aphra, just on a side note, I think it shows you what Carrie Fisher did with Princess Leia 40 years ago, and how everybody is on board with nobody gives it a second thought. It's like, oh yeah, Dr. Aphra, sure. Doctor, we don't care if it's he or she, or it just, here is a strong character that can lead a comic or lead a story, and nobody questions it, and it's awesome.
Just happens to be female, and just happens to be the two items we open the show with are both female characters taking center stage. It's all good. It is all good. Okay, we've got another piece of news about another limited run, Rob.
Yes, Mace Windu. He gets his own 5-issue miniseries. Star Wars Jedi Republic / Mace Windu will expand the story of Jedi Master through 5 miniseries. Matt Owens and Dennis Conway or Matt Owen, sorry, is the writer, and then art by Dennis Conway. The story picks up on set of the Clone Wars, and we see Mace settling into his new role as general in the Grand Army of the Republic.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. I should mention that these two, the Mace Windu news and the next piece of news, all come from Tim, who's been writing about, toys and comics over on Talk Star Wars for us, Tim of Nerd Room fame.
Yes.
So he's doing a sterling job over there at the moment. But this sounds intriguing. Another limited series as well, which is, I think, good for a couple of reasons. Easy to consume. And I wonder how much of a story there is really to tell about Mace.
Yeah. Well, also, too, they don't be when they released the limited series, they did this with Kanan. But what they did, they had the limited 5 issues, and then it was so well received, they got the go ahead, the green light to do more.
Right. Okay.
So they have that. Hey, if Captain Phasma or Mace Windu, if it's just flying off the racks, like they have that. Oh, you know what? Here's more. We're going to continue.
Hmm. And it's a bit like they've just done with Vader as well. So we're looking down the barrel of a new run of Vader, but it takes place in a very different time. So the character we're going to get will be very different, won't it? Because it takes it picks up mere moments after the Revenge of the Sith, the wrap of his part in Revenge of the Sith. So it's that's going to be interesting. And if Mace, if he does hit the ground running and people are interested in that character again, then maybe they'll go back and they'll tell us a story about him when he was a Padawan.
Yeah, and we all know Samuel Jackson from his message at Celebration is more than willing to reprise his role if needed.
Yeah, he's going straight for the throne, isn't he? He's not messing around. We all know where he stands. Yeah, I think a lot of people would welcome him back, but I don't know if Lucasfilm are ready to do that yet, to both cover old ground and take a stab at a character that's already done his service to the story. It's a bit different when you're talking about a character like, I mean, with Rogue One, you've got all new characters. A story we're familiar with, but all new characters doing new stuff. With Han Solo, you're talking about one of the premium characters, one of the top shelf characters that you want to go and see, regardless of what the story is or the recast or anything like that. With Mace, I'm not sure there's much of an audience for him at this point.
No, not a standalone. No, I can't. And as a character, if it wasn't Sam Jackson, would we be so drawn to him?
No.
Exactly. So it's
the only time the guy did anything interesting was when he got his ass handed to him by the Emperor, right? That was the only time he did anything of any interest. But maybe this book will change the way he's viewed, and it might add a bit of credit to it.
Again, like I said, it's coming. Like, I definitely get it the day it comes out. So it's I'm looking forward to it. They're not, and what I like about these Star Wars stories in the Marvel runs, they're not afraid. Like, they look at the Chewbacca run, like that was, it was just
wasn't it an old book?
It was, we had enough issues, we didn't need any more. It's probably my least favorite, but it's still that was interesting.
I wonder how much of that is calculated by. I know the story group only have limited sort of involvement when it comes to these creators with what they're doing, but I wonder if it's to sort of push the parameters of Star Wars, to try and go off in weird, idiosyncratic ways and see what lasts. If you tell a challenging, stylistic story like the Chewbacca run, and it's outside the normal set of storytelling, the paradigm that we're familiar with, Star Wars storytelling. I wonder if they're seeing what their limits are.
Yeah, maybe. What I'm
a safe place, isn't it, to do it?
Personally, I'm hoping we get the R2 book, but instead of we actually get thought bubbles. If anybody's seen the R2 subtitles, it's been going around social media.
I've seen it. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been funny, but to actually, can you imagine? I think it was the have you seen the Shakespeare adaptations of Star Wars?
Mm-hmm.
R2, his soliloquies. Sorry, it's late. His thoughts are actually articulated. It's written out.
Yes.
So you can actually read what he's thinking throughout these, throughout the story, and to read that, and you're going, oh wow, that, oh, that might be onto something. Like, God, we've never, we've always assumed what he's thinking or assumed what the beeps mean, and you know, people answer him, so we kind of, oh, we understand context, what he's saying.
Yeah, you're, exactly. You're getting it contextually, yeah.
Exactly, but maybe, you know, maybe just a, maybe three issues, you can give us a little, what's R2 really thinking?
Even just like a one-shot, I mean, they did it with 3PO, didn't they? They threw out a one-shot out there.
Yeah, that so, was for the Red Arm.
Yeah, throw an R2 one-shot out there and see where it lands. And if you can get away with that, if you can get away with the thought bubbles and you get a more personal connection with R2's yep. inner monologue, see how that survives. Because usually we're always one step removed from him, aren't we?
Yeah. Well, that's what I was expecting with the Chewbacca run. I thought, whoa, we're gonna get what he is thinking, and no, we didn't. It was more Rars and him playing off the other characters. I'm like, wow, that was I thought for sure we're gonna actually be able to read his thoughts
a little in too,
plain English.
Perhaps a little too daring.
Yes.
For now. All right, the final piece of final piece of comic book news is a game from Tim. So this is a Rogue One one shot called Cassian and K2SO. So this will be a 40-page one shot that'll explore how Cassian and K2 first met. It's going to be written by, now look, I get hit with the big complicated name, Dwayne Zwozinski. My apologies, Dwayne, if I've messed that up. With art by Fernando Blanco. The short synopsis seems to reveal that K2 will already be reprogrammed when the pair first encounter each other. That's interesting. It will be interesting to see how their relationship develops in the relatively short story. As this is in Tim's words, as I was always under the impression that K2's loyalty was born out of Cassian saving him from Imperial captivity. So the one shot will also be hitting comic book shops, brick and mortar and digital in August. Yeah, this is interesting because I was under the impression that K2 was saved by Cassian and reprogrammed by Cassian. And that's where the connection came from.
Yeah, that's. I thought the same thing. That's what I was, because I. Well, he says, "Oh, don't worry, he's reprogrammed," but he never actually says he did it.
Yeah.
So.
We're all under the same impression. So I wonder where that came from. It must have been in something that came out in the press on the way on the road to Rogue One.
Yeah, and I don't know. It'd be neat to see because without Alan Tudyk. Who plays K2SO? It's neat to see. I've been reading the Rogue One adaptation in the comics,
mm-hmm.
and he's still. I don't know if I'm hearing his voice while I'm reading it, and that's so it still play. It still plays for me because if you took that like if you took the like BT and 000 in the Dr. Aphra comics, I don't know what their voices are. I can assume they sound like 3PO and R2.
Yeah.
But I don't have that. I mean, now when I'm reading the Rogue One adaptations, I'm looking, oh, there I hear Alan Tudyk. I hear that I'm reading it the way he portrayed it.
Yeah.
And now with this a new story, I'll again read the K2SO as he's talking, I will hear his voice. So it'll probably, I don't know if it's going to be more me in my head canon or or what I'm reading off the page that's going to bring it to life.
That's really interesting, actually, because that's an important question. How much of it? I think it would be a shame. I'm looking now at an Elite Series K2SO sitting right underneath you on your Skype call.
Yes.
And I'm looking at him thinking, how much of that character was Alan Tudyk and how much of it was the dynamic between the character of K2SO and the character of Cassian? And yes. I'm not sure that it's enough. What we connected with on screen was enough of that character and Cassian. I think it was mostly Alan Tudyk.
Right.
So this will be the proof of the pudding there. If it makes that transition into a book and the chemistry's there, great, I'm in.
Yes. Well, and like I said, the Rogue One adaptation, I'm just reading it and we're getting some different pages that weren't in the movie, but at the same time I'm reading the story that I've already saw on screen.
Yes, it's easy to make that connection. It pulls across, exactly. Doesn't it? One for one. Yeah. Well, this will be all new turf for everyone to explore. So that will be the proof of the pudding, in my opinion, whether or not K2SO can really stand on his own without Alan Tudyk's voice do most of the work. But Roll on August. I think I'll have a look. I think I'll have a look at this in August because it's a one shot, so it's not too much of an investment of time.
Yep.
I'll pick that up and have a look. So I'm sure we'll cover that in the August edition of the podcast, eh?
Absolutely. And thank you, Tim, for bringing
thanks,
these to
Tim.
Our attention.
Tim's, yes. Tim, it, you know, we talk about the people that come on to talk Star Wars as contributors and how valuable they are. I mean, your good self and with the roundtable, and obviously it gave birth to this podcast. It goes without saying, all the contributors are valuable. Tim and Mark Airy have really surprised me with how far they've taken things. Mark mm-hmm. is now doing a daily toy run podcast, and Tim is just sweeping the boards on the site with the written content. It's just knocking it out of the park.
Yeah, and again, it's playing to the strengths. Like, if we're, like I said, this show here, we're doing the Marvel run of Star Wars, and I've read them all. You mean, and we have a relationship because of the TSW roundtable, and we know each other, and so it makes for a good fit. But like, again, like with the toy box, I could maybe have a few tidbits on vintage toys, but nothing like what these guys know. It's just like, it's fantastic. It's the right people in the right spots
the knowledge. It's just, I've been on that. I can't even pretend to know even a tiny percent, a tiny fraction of what these guys know about, or what these guys have forgotten about collecting.
Yes.
But I find myself drawn to that Facebook group to watch them talk about vintage, about the new stuff that's coming out, about,
mm-hmm.
about, I didn't even know what a solid case was in toys. I had no idea. They're talking about solid cases going out to stores. I thought, I have no idea what this is. I now know. I've learned what it means about that solid case means it's a box with only numerous toys, but they're all the same character. So one box full of Han Solos, that's a solid case. I had no idea what that meant.
Yep.
I'm learning so much from these guys all the time because they are just steeped in it.
Well, I'd love to. I wish they were there with us at Celebration, because when we saw that Boba Fett, I remember I took a few pictures with a certificate. That was the original prototype with the rocket that came off, and I wanted to make sure, I got to get this on the VIP just because you know how appreciated it's going to be.
Yeah.
And can you imagine walking around to all those vendors with Mark, like, just to be like, tell you, oh, what about this Luke Bespin? What about this R2? What about this pair?
That's repro. That's the thing. Yeah. The biggest thing I've learned, obviously, our conversations at Celebration were a lot about those sorts of the things that can trip you up. And
yes.
I'm preparing myself to enter into the collecting realm. I picked up half a dozen vintage figures from Jeremy at the weekend, which mm-hmm. he very kindly gave to me. So they're now on my shelf. So I know I'm on my way.
The first taste is free.
Yeah, that's it. I'm getting that feeling, my friend. I'm getting that feeling. Right, should we talk about some of these Darth Maul books that we've read in
Absolutely.
The past month then? So we're looking at issue 2 and 3. We had a grand plan, I think, in issue 2 of the podcast to perhaps try and get caught up on Dr. Aphra as well, but there was no way I was going to be able to do that this month. I've just been too busy. So I've managed to read 2 and 3 on my iPad. I know you read them in physical copies.
Mm-hmm.
Do we want to do a quick recap of the story?
I think we're far enough ahead. Sure. Did you want to?
Yeah. So I've written down a recap. So this is pretty much the way I saw it. So Darth Maul continues. This is issue 2. Darth Maul continues his search for the Jedi Padawan, rumored to have been captured and due to be auctioned off to the highest bidder. After laying waste to a bar full of criminals on Nar Shaddaa, with the help of the bounty hunters Cad Bane and Aurra Sing, I'm so thrilled to see those characters in this book.
Yes.
Darth Maul gets information that the auction of the Jedi Padawan will take place at the Drazgul system. So Maul slips away to find the Padawan in a cell. They go to this system and he sneaks off and finds her, and he meets the Padawan, whose name is Eldra Kaitis. She's a kidnapped Jedi Padawan, and she soon realizes who Maul is and what he represents. This was really interesting to me. So a group led by a character named Dukra win the auction for the Padawan, and Cad Bane, Aurra Sing, and the rest of Maul's gang sneak in to Dukra's ship, which is being watched by all these names. It's just, it's so, yes. This thing is thick as soup, isn't it? So they sneak onto the ship, and when the Padawan's brought onto the ship, Maul reveals himself, eliminates the people that have won her in the auction, and takes her for himself. And this, obviously, we transition now into issue 3. The woman, what was the character's name that was doing the auction? I don't know if I've written it down in the notes. Oh, yeah, Zev Zrexus.
Yes.
She takes down the ship that they're on with the Padawan, and it looks like it's going to crash on a nearby moon, and I think we're going to head into some sort of manhunt, sort of predator-type thing by the time we get into the next issue, which I think is due out in a matter of days now as we're recording this. So it's a this story is a really nice, varied... These two issues are really nice and varied. It could so easily have spent half a dozen episodes just dealing with the auction, but it very quickly whipped through this thing to get us into the position, to get us into the story that I think is really going to be told, which is drop these characters on that planet, manhunt. So what did you think of this, Rob?
I thought it was great. I thought you took a screenshot of it on our show notes. When they get into the tussle about the training, when Maul's trying to get the Padawan with the ink blot.
Oh, brilliant! Yeah,
the alien. He has this, like, an octopus like face or squid.
Squid face. I think the toy.
Yeah, he's not. He's not a Mon Calamari. Like, he's not Admiral Akbar. But so he, in order to disarm Maul, he sprays ink in his face.
I think they're called the Quarren, this race.
Okay.
And there was a couple of them in the original Kenner run of action figures that were in Jabba's group, and they're the things they got the little octopus like legs hanging off of their face. They're really weird looking things. So this is in issue 2 of Darth Maul when he gets into the fight out in the bar, and he's trying, you can see him desperately trying not to reveal who he is and the Force ability, and not to break out the lightsaber. And so he gets caught up in this kind of fist fight, bar fight.
Yes.
And it's that whole thing, I think I've put in my insights just a little bit down on the show notes. I've put, if only Qui-Gon had thought to spray Maul in the chops with some squid ink, he might still be alive. it's a really interesting little turn and a very unusual move to sort of weaken Darth Maul in that way, that one of these little scallywags from this bar could get the better of him in that way.
Yeah, I really enjoyed, well, book 2 I really, really enjoyed. It's the way the writer, he takes Darth Maul's character and he's looking at him, and to see him almost mentally seething, if that makes any sense, like Colin, rage. Yes, Colin Bunn and Luke Ross, like the artist Luke Ross, together, they've painted Darth Maul where it's like, oh, you can, Colin Bunn with his thought bubbles, you can really see him thinking like, oh, I want, like, this thirst, this bloodthirst to kill a Jedi.
Yes.
And rightfully so, like, Palpatine has trained him since birth to only want to slaughter Jedi. That's...
And we see some of that, don't we? There's that kind of nursery rhyme that plays, and he keeps having the vision, or he's remembering an experience, because I got the impression that Maul that we were seeing in the flashback with Sidious was a younger Maul when he's being taught to hate the Jedi and fear them. He sees them in his mind's eye kind of like monsters, doesn't he?
Yes.
That's detail that we spoke about earlier. That's detail you can lay into these characters in expanded storytelling. You just can't get that onto the screen in a film. No. It just slows things down too much.
Yeah, and also, too, again, I know I keep banging this drum, but just to see Darth Maul as for a comic character, just, like, he's perfect. Like, he just leaps off the page. Like, there's a lot of detail to him. I'm sure he's quite laborious to draw and sketch, like, yeah, with tattoos, all his horns. Yeah, the tattoos and the horns. But, wow, does it pay off? Because it's like he's made for it. It's like, this is perfect.
Well, this is with a lot of... with a lot of Star Wars storytelling, with it being very visual, it's, you have to register who these characters are, what the locations are in an instant. And Maul's got a very distinctive silhouette, even with the hood up, the horns under the hood, from a very specific sort of shape. So he's got a really distinctive silhouette, and it works so well in the storytelling in these two books. And you're right, that seething rage that he's got, that hatred that got, and he's so singularly driven. He's always at the start of the next move when people are just catching up to the end of the last one. And I really find that intriguing about this guy, because we do see that in Phantom Menace. We do see that drive. We do see that singular vision and that rage. But this is just sort of showing it existing outside of Sidious's plan.
Well, I think I mentioned this in one of the, because I reviewed both 2 and 3 for the website, and I mentioned in one of them that this is really great because you had Darth Maul, we got him in Phantom Menace, and then boom, he's gone. Now we got treated to more Darth Maul in the animated series, both Clone Wars and Rebels, but to see Darth Maul at his prime, or not prime, but full. Yeah. Which was what he not yet halved by Obi-Wan. So to see him, it's like, it's almost like, oh, you had this great villain, and he visually is fantastic, and then you cut him in half. What happened? Like, so here's a little story of where, like, yes, we get to see how he was like before he was jaded with Palpatine or the Emperor, and how he just was his bloodthirst now in the book for the Jedi. When we see him on the television screen, it's like, oh, I just want to kill Obi-Wan. That's, you know, it's at the bottom line. Yes, he wants to do bad and do all these other things, but killing Obi-Wan is what he wants.
Yeah, and I wonder whether or not that sort of spoilers for this series of books in a way, because surely you can't, his experience with his Padawan, it can't go the way we expect it. He can't kill that Padawan, because he's still got the bloodthirst when he goes up against the Jedi. You register Qui-Gon as the first Jedi that he takes down. You know, that's the fulfillment of his goal.
Yes.
And if
maybe in mentally he's going, I killed a Padawan. I killed an apprentice. I guess
she's not quite there. Now I'm ready for the big leagues. I guess. The other thing that frightens me is that they might try and pair the two up in they have to team up in order to survive on the planet, and then there's a grudging respect or whatever. I don't want to be asked to view Maul as a sympathetic character.
We
got enough of that later on when they looked at with Sam Worthington's a very different series of films. With Sam Witwer's portrayal of Maul on Clone Wars and Rebels, we got to look at that more sympathetic side of that character there. There's not a lot of it, but there's a bit of it. I don't need that now. I'm quite happy for him to be a fully fledged bad guy.
Yeah, and it's like looking at somebody that, in their early 20s, just raging hormones and just a rebel and fearless, and then seeing them age and mature and being a little softened at the edges, but more wiser and more, maybe a little more dangerous because of their knowledge. But this is what we want. This is like, okay, just Maul, full throttle. Let's build them up and don't shave any of the edges off. Just let's have them.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the inclusion of some of these top tier bounty hunters like Cad Bane and Aurra Sing are great. The other two characters that are in their little cabal I can sort of do without really, but Cad Bane and Aurra Sing are great additions, and I love how backstabby everybody is in this book. Everyone's got their own agenda, everyone's ready to throw everybody else under the bus. It's absolutely brilliant. You just wouldn't I couldn't move in these circles. I wouldn't survive.
No.
I wouldn't make 2 seconds.
No, I'm too Canadian and trusting to be like, oh, hey, buddy. Oh, a knife in my back. Oh, wow.
Literally, as well. There is, in issue 2, there is a knife that goes flying around with the Force, right? He allows himself that one little advantage. Did you notice the other screen grab I put in here as well? We get a cameo from Constable Zuvio.
Yes.
In the bottom right-hand corner of the panel.
Yeah, yep.
He, if only they made an action figure of that character, that would be, I'm sure that would fly off the shelves. Slash pegs.
Yeah.
Okay. So insights wise, I put I made my comment about if only Darth Maul knew he could have used squid ink, we perhaps would have been around for a little while. Darth Maul still seems fearful of Darth Sidious. This I really like this element, and this started in issue one and it's carried through, in fact almost to the point where they might be over egging the pudding a little bit, but he's very, very fearful that Sidious will see through his betrayal.
Yeah, well, it's well, I think it too is it's because of his rage, like his bloodlust to kill, and even just whip out his lightsaber, his double staffed lightsaber, like just to go crazy on everybody. That's what's it's this anchor that's keeping him, and it's and actually I think it makes for the story. I think it that's when we're seeing the seething and his thought bubbles of like his. It's almost like a caged animal,
yeah.
And that cage is the Emperor, and yes. Without that, it would just be like a panel after panel of just a bloody mess. Like
no, you're right.
Limbs flying. So it's. I think I love the fear, and it just shows how powerful of an influence the Emperor has over him. And I love it because it's really making the story really tasty. Like you're savoring every page, going, "Oh wow, that's the anchor. That's what's keeping me." Reading it going, oh, I know, but he can't, he's in a fight. He can't use the force or he can't pull out his lightsaber. He can't do this or yeah, he wants to, or it's his thoughts are just, they're so interesting. It's because he is caged. If he wasn't, he'd just be off the chain. And
yeah. And then there's no, I mean, all this stuff that I'm pointing out, it is unexpected. It is somewhat unique and it does tie in with the canon character that we're familiar with, that we have been familiar with the best part for the best part of 20 years, and it is very much that thing that you said is this guy is being ruled by fear. It's not like he's on board. It's not like he's on board with Sidious in any idealistic way. It's not like he's saying, "Oh, I completely agree with you. Let's get you into a position of power." He's only there. He's like a pit bull on a chain, barely. Yep. Barely being controlled by his master, but also very fearful to step out of his master's control.
Yes.
And that makes for a really interesting dynamic, really fascinating dynamic, that there's this all-powerful creature in this book, Darth Maul, who could probably, in my estimation, probably stand up to Sidious, but the fear of making that move prevents him do it. And we see this repeated with Vader as well. Until we get to Empire, and then Vader starts to get the inkling that he might be able to step out of the Emperor's shadows and do a bit more.
That's only until Luke came around to like, if I have him on my side.
Yeah, because the Sith are like monkeys swinging from tree to tree, aren't they? They won't let go of one branch until they've got a firm grip on another.
Mm-hmm.
And so he, clearly he's afraid of Sidious, but he hasn't got anybody. And I don't even know if Maul has the capacity to view somebody. I mean, we know later in life he does because he views Ezra like that in Rebels, but I don't think at this point he has the capacity to look at a force sensitive and think, if I flip you, like this Padawan now, this Katis Padawan, I don't think he has the capacity to look at her and think, if I can flip her to the dark side, train her as my Padawan, we can rise up and take over as Sith. He just doesn't have that capacity, I don't think.
No, and he's not, and it's almost like... it's almost like a terrorist cell, fictional or otherwise. People are portrayed as like following one ideology. You mean like it's not like he's following the dark path. He's following Palpatine or the Emperor. Like period. That's it. It's not for the greater good. Yes, they have the cause they're after, but he's like he doesn't give a crap who rules or who's in the Senate or if there is a Senate or if they're whatever. It's just no. He follows the Emperor, period.
Yeah.
And he's trying this. That's what what makes these issues so compelling is we're seeing him going and just, oh, okay, just a little taste, please. Like, you know, let me quench this thirst of this bloodlust.
Yeah. But you know, it's what you said to me earlier about collecting. Only the first taste is free.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't think if he broke the seal on this, I don't think there'd be any stopping him. So,
no.
Okay, final thoughts. I've made a couple of notes here. I think the use of Cad Bane and Aura Singh is interesting, to say the least. But with Aura Singh, I'm wondering, I've said this elsewhere as well, I wrote to the Tumbling Saber guys about it. I wonder if there's something that ties her to Maul and later to Anakin on Tatooine, because we see her watching Anakin during the pod race in Phantom Menace.
Right.
So is Maul Aurra Sing a gateway to Sidious, and then is she working for the Sith when we see her in Episode 1?
Could be, kind of like a side per, like Dr. Apra was for Vader and Vader Down. Like, maybe. Mm. Yeah.
He needs, I think Sidious needs somebody there sort of pulling strings for him, making things happen.
No, that's, I didn't even cross my mind. It was just like, oh yeah, that's a neat Easter egg. And then, no, that could be an Easter basket if you're correct on
it. Like, great way of putting it. That's awesome. All right. You ready to drop some ratings on these things?
Yes, I swept 8 out of 10 for both of them.
Okay. I've got 7 out of 10 and 8 out of 10, respectively. I think this is getting better as it goes.
Yes. This is, again, we've said this before. I've been super impressed with Dr. Apra. Again, I don't know. It's Lando blew me off. Blew me off the page. Like, it was just like, oh, wow, this is great. But then again, I picked it up going, oh, how good could this be?
Yeah.
You know, like, so I don't, it's hard to place yourself in the mindset before you've gotten into these stories. But Darth Maul, I thought, oh, this is going to be good. And it's good.
Yep.
Period. Like, this is it.
I also think it's, between this and Aphra, they're raising the bar by which, the other books will be judged. And whether or not that's doing the other books any favors, I don't know, which is why I probably won't pick up, Phasma until it's in the trade, so that I don't lose interest. And right. I might go back and start sweeping up some of the other books in the trade form as well, Han Solo in particular.
Yeah, I think I explained this last episode with the ratings. I'm rating it, these Star Wars books against other Star Wars books.
Yeah.
Like, we're not jumping out of the Star Wars comic universe. Like I said, if you're taking Batman the Dark Knight, and if that's your number 10, if that's a 10, would Darth Maul be an 8? Probably not. You may be more like a 7. As compared to all the other Star Wars books, I haven't found my 10 yet. Fingers crossed with some of this new Vader coming, but I haven't found that. I think that'd be hard to give, but still, 8 is a solid score. Like, for me, that's,
if any character's gonna get up there, it's gonna be Vader, right?
Yes.
Especially when we start to look into the story that shaped that character, because we're getting those little extra bits laid in, like in Rogue One, that mm-hmm. final few moments of him in the corridor. We're getting new colors and shapes attached to Vader now.
Yes.
So to go back to a point where he isn't a whiny little child,
yes,
but he is sort of trying to find his feet as this monster of his own making, I think this is going to be fascinating.
Yeah. And the whiny child, I don't know. Like, when we saw Luke trying to get power converters at Tosse Station, you think it's Hereditary?
Yeah, I think it might. I think it might.
It might be.
Watch to see how whiny Rey gets, because then we'll know whether or not she's a Skywalker. All right. So we've got a voicemail, and then we can think about wrapping this thing up. We're setting up next month's show and then wrapping up. Last month, we spoke about the digital comic codes that were given away in the physical copies.
Yes.
And we had a voicemail from Tim on the subject, and you had plenty to say on the subject. I didn't have a lot to say, which is uncharacteristic for me, but on that subject, a little bit ignorant. But we also got just a day too late, I think, we got a voicemail from Nathan.
Okay.
It's a couple of minutes long. So here are some of Nathan's thoughts on the subject of digital codes in comics.
Hello, Mark and Robert. I'm so glad that I could be a part of this episode of TSW Comics, the latest endeavor by the team at Talkstar. Sorry, Mark, I just can't read this. This is ridiculous. I wanted to kind of give my thoughts on the whole Marvel digital comic code debacle that's been going on the last couple months. Started back in January when Marvel announced that they were changing the way that their digital comic codes worked. The way it had worked was that you got a code in your physical comic, you put that code in on Comixology or where have you, and you got the free digital version of that same comic book, that same issue. Then they changed it in February to basically, no matter how many comics you bought, no matter how many physical comic floppies you bought, no matter how many times you tried to put in to input the code, you would only get one or two or three random comics that they had chosen for you. They just announced a couple weeks ago that starting in May, they were going to return to that old way of working, and they were abandoning this new way that they were going to try to do things. So it's great that they're returning to the program that they had, and that I can now continue to receive the free digital versions of the comics that I'm buying. Because the way that I read comics usually is that I buy the comics and I put the digital code in, and then I take my iPad to work with me and I read the comics on my lunch break or whenever I get a chance to. Rarely do I even read the actual floppy. Of course, that's changed recently because I haven't had a choice, because I buy the floppies and I'm not going to buy the comic twice and buy it digitally on Comixology, obviously. So it's great that they're returning to the program. But the problem is now I have a 2 or 3 month chunk of my comics collection that I don't have digitally, that I do have physically. So while it might not seem like a big deal, and it, in reality it's not a huge deal, it's just very frustrating that now, if I want to reread those comics, there's a point from 2015 to January or February of 2017 where I can read them all digitally, and then there's going to be a chunk from May 2017 on that I'll be able to read them digitally. But if I'm rereading, say, the main Star Wars title, when I get the issue, whatever it was, in February, then I'm going to have to go and dig out my physical copy from my collection. So it's just really, really annoying. So yeah, I hope you guys have a great show. I'm looking forward to hearing it, and may the force be with you.
Awesome. Thank you, Nathan.
There we go.
So you made similar points to the points you made last month about how, well, for him it's the convenience of being able to pick up those books and read them in a non-destructive way.
Yeah, actually, we had a little back and forth on Facebook after our last episode aired. He was saying I made mention that when I peeled off, I had got issue one of Star Wars when it first came out, and I peeled off the redemption code and the paper ripped.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, oh no, there's my issue one. And now I have this redemption code, but now I got a digital copy, but my physical copy's ripped. And for collectors, obviously, that's a no-no. The best thing about the digital copy is being able to reread your comics and not hurt your physical copy.
Yeah.
But he was saying he hasn't had a problem. So maybe it was a first issue thing with me, or maybe something happened where maybe I was just too rough. Couldn't wait to get that digital copy and rip my book.
As Kyle at Tumbling Sabers fond of saying, some people's mileage will vary, and you know, he hasn't had that experience. You have had that experience, so clearly it is an issue, albeit quite rare.
Yeah.
But his concerns are that he doesn't want to have to go in and dig out those floppies every time he wants to reread. So now he's got a gap in his digital collection.
Oh, as a completionist, that would drive me insane. I don't know.
I think the only thing he's going to be able to do, and I know he said in his voicemail there he doesn't want to have to buy these things twice, but I think because the issue is rectified, now all he's got to do is be able to bridge that gap. And Nathan, I'd suggest going to our site and use the shortcut to go into Amazon and pick up those books digitally there, and they will drop down through, cascade down through your Comixology app, and you'll pay half the price that you would pay in the actual Comixology app or in the app on Marvel. I found buying straight from Amazon to save me a lot of money as I go along picking these books up. It means I can pick up something like The Screaming Citadel for a lot less than I would do in in the Marvel app and read it on that app right next to the thing and save money. So if it doesn't appeal to me, the sting's taken out of it.
Well, and it's perfect for the listeners literally globally. Like, it's, I know in Australia they have a hard time getting books. Matt Keegan was mentioning, he goes, yeah, they get books 2-3 weeks later, a month later. Like, even Nathan, he's in Newfoundland in Canada, and because there was something wrong with the shipping boats, they couldn't get it through the island. Like,
drive me mad.
Well, that, and well, for me, like, I literally, I, you know where I'm going to be tomorrow at this time. I'll be at my comic book store and I'll be grabbing my Wednesday pulls and posting a picture, you know, so I'm, for myself, it's the ritual of going. And so if I had that denied, where it's like, if I, for some reason, moved to a faraway place and couldn't get my comics the day they came out, it'd be jarring for me.
Yeah, it's a bit like
the digital copy. Oh, sorry, the digital copies, they make sense for if you are far away, because the internet, as long as you can get that.
Instantaneous.
Yeah.
Instantaneous. You download that book and you're away reading it straight. I mean, if you still wanted to pick up, like you said, you like the trades because you can have them on your shelf, you have the spines and you get that physical, tangible thing that you can flick through and thumb through those pages, look at the artwork that's appealed to you over and over again.
Yep.
There's something about connecting with, you know, it's why people love vinyl, and it's something, the physical manifestation of this thing you love to connect with. There's something in that that is missing from digital consumption.
I think Stan Lee said it. He said, comics are like women's parts. Their pictures are nice, but holding them are a lot nicer.
Brilliant.
Good old Stan.
Yeah.
Yes.
Family show. Comic book show.
Yes.
Comic book legend. That's great stuff. Nathan, thank you very much for sharing your thoughts. I'm sorry we couldn't get it onto last month's episode, but as you know, we did that one in the field when we were at Celebration, and it was all a bit, everything was a bit of a rush last month. So I'm glad we could get that in this month's episode. So if you want to, if you've got something that you want to share on any subject with the comic, any of the news stories that we shared on this episode, if you want to be heard, send us email or voicemail to talkstarwars.co. No, that's not right. What's the email address? talkstarwarsinfo@gmail.com. That's talkstarwarsinfo@gmail.com. And if you just put TSW Comics in the subject line, I'll make sure that Rob gets a copy. And we can cover that in next month's episode. Speaking of which, what are we going to look at for next month, Mr. Cast?
Next month, will, you know, I want to say Vader, but will it be out by the time we record?
I really don't know. I'm not too sure what the release date is. I mean, maybe we should put a proviso in. That perhaps we'll do the next Darth Maul, and then if Vader drops, we'll cover that as well.
Absolutely.
Because I think we're both going to go after that straight away, aren't we?
Yes. And also, too, let me know if you want to do a side note on if you get a chance to read Lando, or if there's any back issues.
Yeah.
If there's any, if we can cover an old arc, like, we don't have to take up the whole show, but, you know, if we want
to. Yeah, be interesting to touch on these things as well. I mean, with the older books that I've missed, obviously I'm playing a lot of catch up here. It's for the people listening to us that probably already been there, seen it and done it, so it will only be a little bit of a retrospective from my point of view, and then we'll get back into the more current topics that I'm sure people are more interested in.
Perfect.
By this point. Okay, great stuff. All right, well, thank you everybody for joining us again this month. Don't forget, you can reach out to us both on Twitter. I'm @TalkStarWars,
and I'm @RobertMMCast,
and you can find everything Rob writes about the comic books at talkstarwars.co.uk/books. You can also pick up a whole wealth of comic books there through our Amazon store. And keep an eye on everything Tim's doing as well. He's doing the Lord's work over there. Okay, thank you very much again, guys, and we will speak to you next month.
Later.
Talk Star Wars is a proud member of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Find us at starwarscommonwealth.com alongside
The Tumbling Saber Podcast,
The Generation X-Wing Podcast,
The TSW Roundtable,
The Skyhoppers Podcast,
and the Nerd Room Podcast.
Head to StarWarsCommonwealth.com and take your first steps into a larger world.